When I first heard of the 80-20 rule, it was when I was trying to get fit and I thought I could indulge in treats for 20% of the time while maintaining a healthy diet for the remaining 80%. However, after reading Richard Knox's The 80-20 Principle, I discovered a deeper application that can revolutionize both personal and professional life. So grab a cupcake and join us for today's episode to uncover how harnessing just 20% of your efforts can yield transformative results that last a lifetime. Lady bosses, are you working even after putting the kids to bed but still not getting results?
Are you tired of spending money on ads that aren't getting engagement?
Do you feel burdened that you aren't fulfilling your purpose in life because you are so consumed with work?
I'm your host, Brooke Boltz. I'm an attorney and founder of Boltz Legal. I started my business and in 1 year was bringing in seven figures and am now bringing in multi seven figures.
And I'm your co-host, Rachel Boltz, owner of Boltz Media. I've helped many businesses build their online presence and increase their revenue through digital marketing.
Want to hear how we did it?
We are here to help you achieve your goals personally, professionally, and spiritually.
So kick off your high heels, sit back, and let's ignite that passion.
We're Miss Biz, where we're putting the miss in biz.
Let's get biz done. The 80-20 principle, also known as the Pareto principle, originated from Vilfredo Pareto's observation of wealth distribution. As an economist, his research involves studying the economics of nations and how resources were distributed among people. During this, he discovered a repeating pattern. He found that the wealth of every nation was controlled by just a small percentage of the population. Understanding this concept aids in maximizing personal and corporate productivity.
So we're going to clarify the 80-20 principle. Simply put, it means that only a small portion of efforts generate the majority of results. Just like as that small percentage controls most of the world's wealth and only a few students excel in their class, a select few actions drive significant outcomes. While the exact percentages may vary, the principle underscores the importance of identifying and prioritizing these critical few steps for maximum impact.
I'm trying to think of examples of this that I've seen in my life or in my business. And one that just came to mind is that in BNI, which is a networking group that I'm a part of, I've heard the statistic that only a small percentage of the members ever invite a visitor to attend. Which is surprising to me because in networking, you are out trying to build relationships. And so you would be incentivized to invite people to come join your networking group where you can see them more regularly and build that relationship stronger. So, but statistically, I heard someone high up in the BNI chain say, the reality is only a very small percent. And I can't remember what it is. It might be 11%. Is what my mind is thinking it is, but a very small percent of people ever invite a single visitor to a BNI chapter meeting.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know, when I think about the 80-20 principle, I think about even just like working out. If you want to start seeing results in your body, you don't need to work out 24 hours, 365 days. All you have to do really is work out three or more times a week for maybe even like an hour and you will start seeing changes in your body. So obviously the more that you do there, the more changes you'll see, but even just that 20%, you will see significant changes if you focus on.
I think of too, as a business owner, of the employees that you have on staff. And if this principle is true, and I think that it is, especially when I've worked at big law firms where there was a lot of employees, you have a small percentage who are doing a lot of the work. And as the owner or as someone in a senior position, you sometimes delegate even more to that 20% because they're reliable and you know that they are able to get the work done and do it well. So we sometimes lean very heavily on that 20%, where the 80% can sometimes skim by without performing. And so I think it's a good business practice that if someone is not performing as they should, and I think you can usually identify that pretty soon, mm-hmm. is to let them go early. And as I go to attorney workshops, it is a repetitive theme that each time I go, people are talking about, oh, I wish I would have let that person go sooner because it just, they were not in the top 20%, mm-hmm. but for whatever reason, they let it drag on longer than they wish they would have.
Yeah, and I think that that's just our good nature too. We want to try to give people second, third chances because sometimes people are going through a lot. And I feel like we empathize with that. But at the end of the day, we have to remember that business is business. So if you have to scale down and focus on your top performers, then that's what you have to do in order to reach whatever revenue goal that it is that you have.
And I do think it's possible to have a business full of top 20 percenters. Mm-hmm. I think that my business right now is in that way. I don't have any people who aren't self-motivated, who don't work hard, who don't pull their weight. Every single person we have does an excellent job at whatever their role is, but it takes time to identify those people and get them in the right seats. So it's not as if you have to just accept the fact that 80% of your business is always going to be underachievers.
No.
Your goal is to find those top 20% and fill each role with those type of employees and then keep them around.
Yes. So businesses that leverage the 80-20 principle to optimize their resources, they really have an advantage compared to other industries. So here's a simplified approach. Analyze your products, your customers, and your market position. Determine which products or services drive the most sales and profit, and identify your top performing customers. Delve deeper to understand why certain segments contribute more than others. View this insight to focus on serving the top 20% and minimize losses from the bottom 80%. Additionally, study your competitors to identify opportunities for improving market share.
So, how do you go about identifying who those top 20% of your customers or your products and services are?
I think an easy way to look at it is money in, money out. Every month when you're going through your financial records, which you should be doing on a monthly basis, is looking at what money is coming in, you can see who is investing the most with you. Who is your most loyal? Who has been with you the longest is another way to look at it as well. And then that way too, you can identify certain trends. And so are most of these clients, are they this type of service, this type of product? What are the common denominators here? And if you don't know that, then you can have an assistant or someone pull that information from your invoicing system and make an Excel spreadsheet for you, or even like a data chart. What do you do, Brooke?
For me, it is not easy to figure out who those top 20% are, because my clients don't pay me for my service out of their pocket. My fees are paid as a percentage of the outcome of the settlement. And so I can't rank people based on how much they pay me or even how long they've been with me, because they're with me for a limited time period, which is to handle their case. And once that case is over, they don't have a need for my services anymore. So there's not going to be that ongoing and continuous relationship. It may be years and or never before they ever have another legal need. So some of the things that I've done to try to identify who these top 20% are is we created a text thread, a joint chat, where the staff can comment. We call it top fans. So anytime a staff member has a conversation with a client where they are complimentary of the firm or where they're just super appreciative, we add their name to the top fans list. And so we've got an ongoing list of those top fans. Also, I look to things like social media engagement. It seems that the same group of people are the most engaged with my posts, the like and share and comment. And there's also the email marketing. When I send out emails, there's sometimes people who reply, and those are people that I consider in the top 20%. So, and then of course, people who have referred business to me would absolutely be in the top 20%. Because they thought highly enough of the firm to refer a friend or family member.
So the 80-20 principle, it can significantly enhance your productivity as well by identifying your peak performance times. To uncover these times, you're going to want to reflect on at least 3 past productive days, noting the circumstances surrounding them. Consider things like timing, environment, and handling of distractions. Document your observations to establish very specific patterns. And additionally, you can apply a similar exercise to enhance your happiness level. Richard Cook suggests using 2 blank sheets of paper to identify what brings you joy and what brings you a sense of achievement. However, it's crucial to avoid blaming others for any lack of productivity or happiness, as this actually impedes progress. So, Brooke, when are you the most productive?
I'm the most productive when I don't have external distractions happening. And that really is the time that I probably work the least. So like early in the morning before emails and phone calls start coming in, and in the evenings or on the weekends, those emails and phone calls tend to die down. So that's when I can really be the most productive and get a lot of things done in a shorter period of time because I'm not being distracted. Unfortunately, that is not when I spend the most hours working. And so one of the things I probably need to work on and improve at is eliminating those distractions during work hours and just setting aside blocks of time that I turn off the emails, turn off the messages and the phone calls to focus on getting something specific done. And I think that could help improve my productivity.
For me, I figured this out a while ago, because if you've listened to some of our other podcast episodes, you'll hear me talk about how I used to work so many hours and sleep very minimal hours until actually I was talking to Fernando about it. And he's like, oh, you're process mastery. You need to do. So I took his advice and it helped me immensely, because what I did is I completely changed my schedule around. So I have found that I am most productive in the morning, but there's very specific circumstances that have to be met in order for me to be productive. So I need to be feeling good. And in order to feel good, I need to get plenty of rest. I also feel my best when I've been to the gym. And it doesn't have to be every single day, but I just generally have more energy when I go to the gym several times a week. Also, when I eat healthy, when I'm eating junk food and Little Debbie snack cakes and that stuff that's not really good for you, it may give you a rush of energy very quickly, but then you suddenly crash. So to me, to really be the most productive, I have to be able to have that solid routine. And the morning time is the best time because everybody's asleep. I mean, not just my family, but most people in the world are asleep at 4:30 in the morning. So I can get through so much stuff before anybody even wakes up and has the time to start emailing me, calling me, or whatever the case may be. If you enjoy the Miss Biz podcast, but still have questions or need advice, we have some exciting news for you. Join us for Miss Biz Connects. Miss Biz Connects is a weekly 1-hour Zoom call on Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
This is 1 hour each week dedicated to you. We want to meet you and put our brains together to help you grow personally, professionally, and spiritually.
To access the meeting link, visit us on our social media pages at Miss Biz Podcast or send us an email to missbizpod@gmail.com.
Join us this Friday and let's grow the Miss Biz Nation. Our relationships shape our identity, and as the saying goes, you become like the people you hang around. Surrounding yourself with successful individuals can inspire personal growth, while negative influences can hinder progress. Although you can't choose your family, you have the power to select your friends, partners, and colleagues. Every person you allow into your life plays a significant role. The 80-20 principle applies here too. While you may have many acquaintances, only a handful of close relationships provide true value. These few people account for 20% or so of your overall relationships, but they make for more or less 80% of the value you get from relationships. Aside from choosing your significant other and best friends, Robert recommends developing 6 or 7 professional relationships as follows. First is 1 or 2 relationships with someone you admire. Second is up to 3 relationships with reliable peers. And third is 1 or 2 relationships with mentees that you will pour yourself into.
Yeah, be intentional in cultivating these connections. According to Richard, for every relationship you form, 5 attributes determine if the relationship will work or not. They include mutual enjoyment of each other's company, respect, shared experiences, reciprocity, and trust. So, Brooke, what are some qualities that you look for when you're finding friends?
Yeah, so I have thought about this actually because your time is so valuable and so limited, and you want to be spending time with people who are lifting you up or bringing some value to the relationship. And so sometimes, though, I end up in friendships or relationships that are more out of convenience, because we have maybe kids the same age, or we maybe work together or things like that. But the relationships that are the closest to me in terms of friends are people who have fun personalities. My best friends all have fun personalities. They like to have a good time. They like to sing karaoke or dance or just kind of let loose and have a good time and aren't super uptight people. And many of them are business owners, because when you're a business owner, your business takes up so much of your mental headspace that talking to friends who can understand that not only allows them to understand and appreciate better what you're going through, but also allows them to give advice based on their own personal experience as a business owner. And then I do find that having kids around the same age helps our relationship to grow even more, because we can do play dates or things that involve the kids. because of course the kids are with me most of the time when I'm not working. And so if I can bring the kids and they can play with the other kids, then it is just,
it's a win-win.
Yeah. Right. It's a way that I can grow in a relationship, but also have my kids have a good time.
Yes. I can see that. And I'm very similar in that regard as well, where, you know, you have to be, you know, you have to have similar interests. You have to have similar goals and ambitions. And there's some things that people who may not necessarily have a business, it's not to say that you're not going to be friends with someone who doesn't have a business, but other friends that are business owners are going to be able to answer some questions that you have whenever you need feedback or ideas or advice. So,
and I'll say a couple other things that are coming to mind is I've had friendships in the past that have kind of just weaned off over time, and some of the reasons for that could just be we're busy, we don't make the time to get together. Also, if there's someone who cancels a lot or isn't available to schedule things, like you say, hey, would you like to set up a play date or a coffee appointment or whatever, and they just either schedule it but then cancel, or they are like, yeah, I'll get back to you, and then they never do. Things like that, that reliability factor, I think also, sometimes not even intentionally, but just allows friendships to die off over time if that happens too often. And also, another factor for me is whether their husband gets along with my husband. I can't tell you how many years I struggled because my husband didn't really connect with the husband of my best friends. And these were particularly the best friends I had before I was married, because they were my best friend as a single. And then when I got married, then they ended up getting married. If our husbands didn't really hit it off, it just was more difficult to grow the relationship, because we had to always be just scheduling things with the mm-hmm. girls. And so now I find that when my husband clicks with the husband of my friend, it really allows that relationship to blossom even more, because we can do couples events.
Yeah. It's just so important to be intentional with your time and be careful who you let in your life, because people, you become a product of your environment, and people, if you're around a bunch of people that curse, you're gonna start cursing. It's kind of natural, or you're gonna be more likely to curse, I should say. So the 80-20 principle, it can also be used for achieving life balance. For many, they live and they desire something that seems so out of reach due to limiting beliefs that they trap themselves into unhappy situations. They may dislike their work, their relationships, or their financial status, but they feel powerless to change. Similarly, individuals who lack clarity about their goals in life, they merely drift through and exist without purpose. That's kind of like what SB was talking about in episode 46 about being whimsical with your time. It's crucial to realize that change is possible and that you can create the life that you envision. And you have to do this by clearly defining your aspirations and seeking inspiration from those who have achieved similar dreams, because success often follows a blueprint.
Something that this is bringing to mind is some study in the Bible that I was doing. I was reading the story of Lazarus, who was raised from the dead by Jesus. And Mary and Martha sent a message to Jesus saying, Lazarus is sick, come quickly and heal him. And Jesus didn't get there in time, and Lazarus passed away. And when he arrived, Martha said to him, Jesus, if only you had been here, then he would have lived. And they had faith that Jesus would have healed them and he could have survived if he had gotten there in time, but they did not have faith that he could raise him from the dead because they had never seen it or experienced it. And so when I started thinking about, well, how does our faith increase and how do we build our faith? It comes from, in part, what we've seen, what we've experienced, but also the stories that we hear. And that's why reading the Bible is so impactful and so important, is because in reading those stories of Jesus's life, it really increases our faith, because that's really our job as Christians, is just to have faith.
Yes.
Above all, to have faith.
Yeah, our careers, they play such a significant role in our lives. And while work is necessary, it's essential to find a vocation that aligns with your values and your passions. If you're dissatisfied with your current job or even your current business, develop an escape plan to transition into a more fulfilling career gradually. And you're gonna want to make sure that you're achieving a balanced life so that overall your happiness level and your well-being is increased. So addressing areas of imbalance, whether in work, relationships, or health, is crucial. And the 80-20 principle suggests focusing on the aspects that yield the most significant results while acknowledging that neglecting certain areas allow others to thrive.
You don't wanna be whack. Cuckoo. We will cut you some slack.
We got you.
You just wanna make a big stack.
Ballin'.
Listen to our biz hack.
Looking to post longer videos on Instagram? Well, here's how to do it. Go to your Instagram app and tap on the plus icon. At the bottom of the screen, choose post to upload a video of up to 15 minutes. The maximum length limit for videos uploaded onto Instagram varies depending on the type of video that you post, whether it's recorded using the Instagram camera or from the gallery, and the device used for posting. For Instagram stories, the maximum length is 60 seconds. Instagram Reels are up to 90 seconds long when created on Instagram or uploaded from your gallery. On the Instagram feed, the duration of time is up to 15 minutes. And for live videos, you can actually host a live video for up to 4 hours.
Speaking of that part where you said an escape plan from being dissatisfied with your current job, it reminded me, someone said to me the other day that if you're in a job that is not where you're called to be at that time, that it feels like you're carrying this huge boulder around with you every day. And I just thought that was a really good description of, and a good sign if you might not be in the place that God has called you to be, is that it just feels like a burden. And by that same token, someone said to me the other day, how is it that you do all the things you do? And I said, honestly, it doesn't feel like a burden. And I think that that's why, because I'm in the path doing the things where God has put me at this point in my life. And it just doesn't feel like work. Even though others may perceive it as that.
Yeah, if you're somewhere where God doesn't want you to be, or where God has a different calling for your life, but you're still doing what you think that you feel is best, you're gonna feel dis-ease. Even if the money's good, the hours are good, everything is going great, if you're not truly flowing in your gift or your calling for God's purpose for you and where he wants you to be, you're not going to feel comfortable. So you've got to figure out, okay, where do I need to go? And what do I need to do in order to get there.
The 80-20 principle suggests concentrating efforts on the top 20% of activities or individuals that yield the most significant results, while allocating less attention to the remaining 80%. However, this doesn't imply completely disregarding the bottom 80%. Instead, it acknowledges that what is considered less important for some reason may be crucial for others. Ignoring this balance risks enabling others to optimize their endeavors.
Yes, so you have to make sure that you're keeping an eye on it. So when I was a business major, we talked about this a lot, about doing a SWOT analysis, where you analyze your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And your strengths and weaknesses, any strength can be a weakness real quick if you're not doing something right, but any weakness can be an opportunity for you to thrive. So if you're looking at another business and they're weak in a certain area, you as this business owner can say, well, I'm going to capitalize on that because this business owner isn't doing a good job with that. There may be threats happening where, like with Brooke, the law changed. She has no control over the law changing. But what Brooke could do is she could start looking for different opportunities to get around this so that she can still continue to serve her clients, but work in a different capacity in order to get the job done. So that's an opportunity because some other law firms may have just said, well, I'm just going to shut down and I'm not going to do it. So that is what the book is talking about when it says to not be reckless or neglectful of that 80%.
That also brought to mind, and I know I keep talking about this, but something I've been studying is about faith, that as Christians, in situations where you may think that you have, that it's outside of your control, you do still have the ability to have faith. So for example, if you are stricken with an illness, some people would say you have no control over that. But in reality, you do still have the tools to have faith despite the sickness or illness or whatever you may be seeing in your personal life. And so by having that tool and having the ability to have faith despite sometimes what the circumstances may be is still an opportunity for growth.
Applying the 80-20 principle to time management can enhance productivity. So reflect on your most productive days, as we mentioned earlier, to identify what is contributing to your success and develop a personalized time management strategy based upon these insights. You know we're all about that case, about that case, no trouble. All about that case, about that case, no trouble. All about that case, about that case, no trouble. All about that case, about that case.
At Volts Legal, we are all about your case. Text or call to schedule a free consultation for all your legal needs. VoltsLegal.com.
So in closing, applying the 80-20 principle to time management, it can enhance productivity. So what you'll want to do, our challenge for you today is to reflect on your most productive days and identify what contributed to your success and develop a personalized time management strategy based upon the insights. So you'll want to look at how much sleep you got. You're going to want to look at what time you woke up, what time you went to bed, what you ate that day, how you handled stress, because all of these different determining factors will help give you that prime schedule so that you are as productive as you can be.
Ephesians 6:13, therefore, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground and after you have done everything to stand.
We appreciate you and are honored to be on this journey with you. We can't wait to help you to encourage you and show you how to grow personally, professionally, and spiritually.
If you found Miss Biz helpful, please leave a review and share with others.
You can follow us on social media at Miss Biz Podcast.
For legal questions or services, please visit boltslegal.com.
And for digital marketing needs, please visit boltsmedia.com. Let's get biz done.